Blog Talk Radio.
The Late Shift with Stephen Bell is presented live and uncensored and contains adult language. The views, opinions, and verbiage expressed do not reflect those of LordsOfPain.net, Lords of Pain Radio, Blog Talk Radio, or any of their respective advertisers. That's all on me, for better or for worse. Regardless, listener discretion is advised. Now let's do this thing. Let's give it a bee-bop-bow. And now, coming to you live from the Late Shift Studios, recapping SmackDown Live here on Lords of Pain Radio, it's the Late Shift with Stephen Bell, with your host, well, me. Again, and yeah, still me. Let's do this thing, alright? Grab some coffee. Do the crunch guitar. Come on, love. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome once again to The Late Shift with Stephen Bell. I am your host, Stephen Bell, hence why my name is in the title. And how are you guys doing? It has been an interesting last, like, 72 hours. It's been an interesting last few days. Let's put it that way. We don't need to necessarily do the math. I suck at math, guys. I suck at math. But, man, we had Money in the Bank, and it's just glaring mediocrity, and the controversy from the women's Money in the Bank match specifically. Then last night we had Raw, which was surprisingly quite good and very well received pretty much across the board based on what I saw. I mean, I didn't dig too deep into it, but I received it rather warmly, and it seemed like other people were pretty into it as well. And then we come to SmackDown this evening. We were all really looking forward to what was going to happen on SmackDown tonight. We had Daniel Bryan coming back. There was, of course, going to be the fallout from whatever the fallout was going to be from the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match and all the circumstances that went on there, and just kind of the general curiosity of what is next. You know what I mean? We're just coming off of a pay-per-view. SmackDown's next pay-per-view is not for a little while. I'm actually not entirely sure when the next pay-per-view is. Let me see here. I believe it is Battleground. I might be wrong about that. Let's see here. Battleground Wikipedia. Yeah, there we go. And we will try to figure it out here. Let's see. Dun, 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 dun. I don't know why we're yes, I believe I talked about this last week. This is going to be a SmackDown branded event. It's coming our way July the 23rd, so just over a month from now. So, yeah, we're a good distance away from that. So I was curious as to whether or not we would see the building of some storylines heading towards that whole thing, or if we were just going to kind of let things lie for the week. And I got the answer. It was kind of the latter one. I didn't really see anything that looked like it was going to lead to further storylines moving forward. Matter of fact, we actually got a couple of things that indicated that storylines that were happening before Money in the Bank are going to be continuing post Money in the Bank. Of course, in the midst of all of that, we're just like a couple of weeks away from the return of John Cena. Who knows what kind of monkey wrench that is going to throw in the works, if anything. One would assume that he will probably have a match at Battleground, seeing as how they're going to have, like, you know, 3 weeks or so at that point to build up to it. So, yeah, I guess we'll see how it all breaks down, but we didn't really get any firm indications as to where things are headed from this point forward as we move towards Battleground. They didn't even mention Battleground. Typically, right after the pay-per-view that has just happened, they typically go ahead and start mentioning, you know, the next pay-per-view almost immediately, especially here since they began these cycles of, you know, like two a month. So I guess they're probably just going to focus in on Great Balls of Fire, a.k.a. Flaming Testicles, here over the next couple of weeks, and then maybe they'll really begin in earnest with the Battleground stuff over there on the SmackDown side of things. It would make sense if they were just kind of, you know, floating along there until John Cena is back into the mix. But I guess we'll see. We will see. By this time next week, it'll be, what, the 27th? So, yeah, next week we know what we're going to be having. That came from the fallout of Women's Money in the Bank. And then the next week after that, it's John Cena. And that's going to be something of a game changer, in my opinion. And that will probably be when they really, in earnest, start building towards whatever is next. But we'll discuss a few things that look like they are still being built up. I mentioned a moment ago, it looks like some of the things that happened before Money in the Bank are going to be continuing now in our post-Money in the Bank world. We'll see about all of that, but yeah, we'll take care of it as we go over the course of the show. But of course, first, we do have some other things to talk about. It's, you know, we got the Heat Seeker here at the beginning. We're going to be talking about some stuff there. But I want to remind you here at the beginning that you can find me on social media. Just hit me up if you want to chat with me, if you want to throw a comment my way, if you think I'm right, if you think I'm wrong, if you want to talk about this or that, being big as a bull, quick as a cat. You can hit me up on Twitter at Stephen F. and Bell is the way that you can do that. Or you can find me on Facebook. Just look for The Late Shift with Stephen Bell, and there it will be. Rock you like a hurricane. And it'll be all kinds of good stuff. You can get at me either which way you really prefer to do so, and I'll be happy to chat with you. But to just go ahead and jump headlong into this thing, it's time, once again, for everybody's favorite. It is the
Heat Seeker.
Man, the button's been acting wonky here lately. I go to push it and it doesn't work, so I wind up pausing after the big the and then there's a pause, and it makes me sound dumb. I guess I should just hold out the until it actually starts to work, but I think the problem is that my mouse is acting kind of wonky. It got dropped here recently, and it's not wanting to click correctly anymore. But you guys don't care about my mouse problems. I mean, come on. We're here to talk about Razzles, and matter of fact, we're here to talk specifically about one thing, the topic that has been on everybody's mind ever since Money in the Bank wrapped up. And well, it's the Women's Money in the Bank match. We all know what we're talking about here. Just as a reminder to anybody out there who might have been living under a rock for the last couple of days, the women had their Money in the Bank match, of course, the first ever Women's Money in the Bank, and it was to crown the first ever Ms. Money in the Bank. They had the match. It was the first one out there on Money in the Bank, the pay-per-view here just last Sunday. And what we wound up with was towards the end, Becky Lynch is climbing up to get the briefcase. James Ellsworth takes it upon himself to jump into the ring. He tipped over the ladder, causing Becky to fall off and wind up rolling to the outside. She had previously taken Carmella off of the ladder. So Ellsworth, he's trying to get Carmella up, and he suddenly you could see an idea dawn on him. He starts looking up the ladder, and he proceeds to climb the sumbitch. And again, I just want to point out, as I did on Sunday, on Aftershock, after Money in the Bank, in the immediate aftermath, it needs to be pointed out, the fans were firmly in favor of all of that. Not so much on Twitter or social media, but the fans in the building reacted very, very much so when he first looked up at the ladder. Everybody was going, yes, 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 yes. And then when he grabbed the briefcase and dropped it down to Carmella, they were just as excited. So the crowd, the live crowd, they was over with them, man. They were excited and happy about this, or at least, you know, intrigued or something, which is a reminder to everybody out there. When you troll WWE, sometimes they just might troll your ass back. So be careful what you're cheering for and booing and stuff like that, because it might come back to bite you in the ass. And it certainly did this last Sunday, because immediately afterwards, everybody was pissed online. My immediate reaction to it, which you can find on the Aftershock program, just look in the archives there of LOP Radio, you can find it very, very easily. I spent the first 30 minutes of the show talking about the Women's Money in the Bank, what I thought of the controversy, what I thought they might do next, et cetera, on down the line. But to put it in a nutshell, I thought that the story was a good idea. I like the creative there. You know, I like the storyline. I like that Carmella's got her little bitch doing her dirty work. And I like that Carmella won, because as I've been saying since they announced the Women's Money in the Bank like a month and change ago, I've wanted Carmella to win the entire time. She kind of needed it more than anybody else, I think, or at least was not necessarily needed it. I suppose Tamina probably needed it more than anybody else, but Natalya not too far behind her. But I think that Carmella was in the best position to win the Money in the Bank this year. Same goes with Baron Corbin. I think that they were kind of on equal footing, and that it would do them well to be respective Money in the Bank holders. And I got my wish, you know. I just didn't think that it was necessarily going to go down that way. I did loosely predict that last week. You know, I didn't flat out say that Ellsworth was going to climb up there and get the briefcase, but I did say that he would probably factor into the equation somewhere along the line, because nothing had been mentioned about it, and you knew he was going to be at ringside with Carmella. It was just a matter of time before he interjected himself, as he is very, very apt to do. You know what I mean? So it was not surprising to me what happened, and I liked the creative behind it, but I am very much of the opinion, firmly of the opinion, that it was completely and totally tone deaf. It was a stupid thing to do. Just because the creative is good does not mean that it is time to pull the trigger on it every single time, because this was hyped up for weeks and weeks and weeks, and the pay-per-view was, you know, somewhat built around it. They made a video package that was all looking at the history of women's wrestling and this and that, et cetera, et cetera. All of that stuff about how big of a deal this was for women and how this was a huge step forward in the women's revolution, this and that, et cetera, et cetera. And then they have a man kind of do the dirty work. And as mentioned on Sunday, again, I don't agree with some of the stuff that was flying around out there. Oh, they just spit in the face of women in general, saying that a woman needed a man to help her and this and that and blah, blah, blah. No, that's not really what was said there, I don't think. That's definitely not what they were going for. I could see maybe if you took that away from that, but I think that it is overblowing the situation. I think that what it is as I said the other night, in order to consider it a man having to do something for a poor little woman down there on the ground, you would first have to consider James Ellsworth a man. And I'm not speaking about personally. I mean, I'm sure, yeah, he's a good dude. He's the big hog, baby. You know he's all man. But his character is not exactly the ballsiest some bitch in the world. You know what I mean? He's basically Carmella's bitch. And, of course, he's going to do whatever he thinks Carmella wants him to do in order to make her life easier. He always has. Ever since this storyline with them started, it's just him bending over backwards to do any and everything to get in good with Carmella. So it's not surprising, and it's actually good writing, in my opinion, that they did that. However, this being the first Women's Money in the Bank, they should never have let that happen. They could have had him help her up. They could have pulled a Rhino from the old TLC. Remember back in the day, Rhino put Christian on his shoulders and proceeded to climb up the ladder. James Ellsworth could have done that. There still would have been people complaining, but at the same time, you know, at least Carmella would have been the one to have unhooked the briefcase and gotten it kind of for herself. You know, there could have been some interference. I think that it would have been best for them to have Ellsworth come in there, tip the ladder over to knock Becky off of it, help Carmella to her feet and get her on the ladder, and then let Carmella do the rest of the work while he kind of just stands there and makes sure that nobody else gets back into the ring or whatever the hell, you know what I mean? Make sure that nobody gets in her way to climbing up there. And then it would still get across that they had cheated. It would still get across that James Ellsworth is her bitch. At the same time, though, it would have allowed Carmella to be the one to get the briefcase. A woman would have gotten the briefcase in the first ever Women's Money in the Bank, which I think really would have killed a lot of the issue that people had with the entire thing. But I understand the issue that was had with it. I think that it's perhaps a bit overblown. That having been said, it was absolutely a dumbass thing to do by WWE. They never should have opened the door for people to think or say the things that they have been thinking and saying over the course of the last couple of days. You know, if you don't want something bad said about you, then don't invite it. You know what I mean? If you don't want people to criticize you for being sexist or for, you know, being, you know, for only pretending to care about women and in reality you're presenting them as weak or blah, 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 or this or that, or, you know, whatever has been said, all the worst stuff that has been said over the course of the last couple of days, if you don't want people saying things like that, then just don't run the storyline. Just don't do it. Alter it. Do something different. But WWE did not do that. They instead decided to go full bear with what they had, and it blew up in their face in a very large degree. And so tonight what we had was the fallout. We were going to figure out, because on the night of Money in the Bank, over the course of the pay-per-view, we had gotten tweets from Daniel Bryan, who we already knew was returning on Tuesday. He was talking about how he was going to address it right off the bat on SmackDown. And Shane McMahon even later tweeted and said that that was unacceptable and that it was going to be addressed. So we knew that it was going to be addressed sometime this evening. I even made the suggestion on the pay-per-view that after Naomi had successfully defended against Lana, Carmella should have cashed in. Carmella should have cashed in the briefcase, taken advantage of the injury to Naomi's leg, and then what you would have is, like, what do you do to her then? You know, you can't strip her of Money in the Bank when she's already cashed it in. Do you take the belt away from her in that instance? If so, do you just hand it back to Naomi, who kind of lost fair and square? Like, what are the logistics of all of that? It would have made it that much more fascinating to me. But instead, we kind of got the easy way out, in my opinion. SmackDown started with Daniel Bryan backstage. He's talking to all of the affected women, with the exception of Carmella. We had Charlotte, Tamina, Natalya, Becky. They're all complaining to various degrees about what happened and this and that. And Bryan says that he wants to see what Ellsworth and Carmella have to say. Well, they opened the show, you know, after the song and all that shit. They are coming down there, F-A-B-U-L-O-U-S, yes, and all that good stuff. I will never again have to question how to spell fabulous because of the lovely and talented Miss Carmella. Miss Money in the Bank, Carmella. And she comes down there. She points out all the obvious things, the things that really are in her favor here. There were no rules. There were no rules in any of this. And for that matter, she, you know, she pointed out that other people have done very similar things. Kane just helped Seth Rollins win Money in the Bank just a few years back. Just 2 years ago, Bray Wyatt, who was also, much like Ellsworth, not even involved in the match, came down there and stopped Roman Reigns from winning Money in the Bank and opened the door for Sheamus to win it. She pointed out all of that. She talked about how the fans didn't complain about any of that, but suddenly they want to pile on her. They're nothing but a bunch of internet trolls. They're pathetic. They should be ashamed of themselves. She earned the contract. The match was no DQ, and you can't break a rule when there aren't any. So she says, you know, Daniel Bryan is going to come out here later. He needs to man up, make a decision, and recognize that I am Miss Money in the Bank, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it. She proceeds to leave along with James Ellsworth, and I have to say, for anybody who was doubting whether Carmella was a good choice for Miss Money in the Bank, watch this promo. I've been saying all along that Carmella is just waiting for the right thing to push her over the edge. This promo was fucking fantastic. She was great. She didn't stumble over anything, and she didn't, you know, let the crowd get to her. She actually fired back at the crowd when they threw some curveballs at her. You know, they were chanting for Daniel Bryan, and she played it into the promo. She was fantastic out there. Just a great opening promo from Carmella, and I really do think that she could very much be something special in the not-too-distant future. I've got a lot of love for Carmella, and I'm excited to see her career progress, but a lot of that is going to hinge upon what Daniel Bryan's decision is. Over the course of the show, various other women were going and talking to him, making their case for him to take the briefcase away, basically. And it boils down to, we get to just about the end of the show. Daniel Bryan makes his way out there. The fans are very, very excited for this. He says it's great to be back, and that him and Shane McMahon have been working on a decision for this whole thing. But that at the end of the day, he was told he has to take his emotions out of it and stick to the WWE rulebook. So he brings everybody out. Charlotte, Tamina, Natalya, Becky Lynch, and finally Carmella, along with James Ellsworth. He says that this decision involves everyone in the ring, and he listened to what Carmella said earlier. She makes some valid points. Money in the Bank matches are no DQ. There's nothing in the rule book that says that you can't have someone else climb up there and get the briefcase. And the rule book simply says that the first person to get a hold of the briefcase is the winner. There's been interference in the past, but that having been said, there's never flat out been a case of someone else climbing up there and hooking the briefcase and giving it to someone. So really, at the end of the day, we are in unfamiliar territory here. Yes, there is somewhat of a precedence set via previous actions in Money in the Bank, but this is very much unfamiliar territory. Ellsworth doesn't like that. So he grabs the microphone, asks Daniel Bryan what's gotten into him. He says that being father to a little hippie vegan baby has made Daniel Bryan soft. So that pisses Daniel off. He gets up in Ellsworth's his chinless face. He tells him to shut up and says that if he talks about his kid one more time, he's going to punch him in the mouth and fire him. I was honest. I thought that that was going to be one of the results of this, honestly. I thought that Daniel Bryan was just going to fire James Ellsworth. That would have been one way to do this. But he did not, and I'm kind of glad that he didn't. I like the pairing of Ellsworth and Carmella. I think that they're a fun pair, and I think they're going to be even better moving forward. But at the end of the day, everybody starts talking and trying to make their little cases here and there. But Daniel Bryan says everybody needs to calm down. He says that Carmella is going to be the first ever – she was the first ever Miss Money in the Bank, but unfortunately, she's also going to be the first ever woman to have to hand over the briefcase. So there's your decision. Carmella is no longer Miss Money in the Bank. He says that he is not going to allow someone like Ellsworth to interrupt one of the most important moments in women's WWE history. He's taking the briefcase, and here's the kicker. There will be another Money in the Bank ladder match. It will be happening next week. All of the same people involved. Tamina, Carmella, Becky, Natalya, Charlotte, all of them going at it. Bryan snatches the briefcase away from Ellsworth, and he leaves. The women start fighting and stuff, and we wound up with Carmella kind of in the middle of Charlotte and Becky. Charlotte hits her with natural selection. Becky puts the disarmor on her. And, yeah, it's not good times for poor Carmella. She started out the evening awfully happy, and then she ends it all off with, you know, not so much with the happiness. And so that's where we stand right now. And what I am curious about is, was this the plan all along? Is that maybe why Carmella did not cash in at Money in the Bank? Because, man, that would have made a hell of a lot of sense. It really would have. Because if you've, like I said before, if you've already cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase, they can't take it away from you. And what are they going to do? Strip you of the championship? Is that cool? can they even do that? You know, it's one of those things, you know, it's what do you do? Well, that didn't pop up because maybe this was the plan all along. If so, then it certainly seems a bit unusual that they would want to give away the women's Money in the Bank ladder match as opposed to having it on the pay-per-view as planned, which kind of leads me to believe that maybe they saw the fallout from all of this. I'm sure that they figured that there was going to be heat generated by it, but I really do think that they were so tone-deaf as to the fact that this was not going to work that they just did not recognize what the reaction was going to be. I don't think that they recognized that the company was going to be called sexist and all of this other stuff. I don't think that they recognized just how badly this was going to make them look. And I think maybe they reacted to it. We're never going to know. I mean, well, we might know eventually one day, but we're not going to know any time in the near future. I'm sure there's going to be rumors flying around. I'm sure that Dave Meltzer or somebody else will have something to say, and there'll be rumors floating around on the internet within, you know, probably maybe already, but by tomorrow, the next day, by the end of the week at the very latest, oh, WWE changed directions, blah, blah, blah. They heard the reaction of the fans and this and that. And the reality of the situation is that we just really don't know, you know? Maybe they just saw, hindsight being 2020, that it was a bad call and decided to correct it. Maybe it was the intention for this to be what happened from the jump. Maybe it was, which, I mean, that doesn't make any damn sense, but frankly, at the same time, none of it makes any damn sense. You know what I mean? It's really kind of hard to say which one makes the most sense when neither option makes any damn sense. However, I really do think that we could be seeing a situation here where WWE is reacting to what the backlash was. And the big question is that enough to correct the mistake? I say no, because even though Carmella is technically no longer Miss Money in the Bank, at the end of the day, that what happens next week will not be the first ever Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. It just won't be. It's going to be the second one because we already had one this last Sunday. That can never be redone. You can't get a do-over on that. You could get a do-over in terms of crowning who is the champion if something wonky happens. Apparently, well, not the champion, but the contract holder. You know what I mean. You know, apparently that is the case. But at the end of the day, there can only be one first anything. And that happened this last Sunday. So this might be too little too late. If this is an attempt to kind of mea culpa, you know, kind of go back and be like, okay, we're sorry. This is, we'll give you what you want. We'll make it a straightforward one. Well, you know, then it just may be too little too late. I'm sure that it'll blow over. Everything always does. Everything in the entire world that has ever happened has always blown over to some degree or another, especially as it pertains to professional wrestling. You know, by this time 2 weeks from now, people will have something to bitch about with John Cena. I'm sure that no matter what John Cena is doing when he comes back, people will find some excuse to complain about it. And hell, if nothing else, there's always Jinder Mahal to complain about. So, you know, I mean, this is going to wind up being a drop in the bucket at the end of the day. But it is awfully lame that the first ever Women's Money in the Bank match is tainted like it is. You know, whether you like the creative, whether you don't like the creative, whether you think the reaction was overblown, whether you don't think the reaction was overblown, maybe you think that it wasn't blown enough, frankly. Either which way you want to slice it, there is an asterisk beside this Money in the Bank ladder match that just happened on Sunday. It will forever have that asterisk beside it. This is a tainted first time for Money in the Bank. It's going to take a little while for that to go away. We're going to need to get another one or two of them under our belt before that goes away, and just having a rematch next week is not going to fix it. So, I don't know. Where do we go from here? Well, it looks to me, of course, we're going to have the match next week. It's probably going to be pretty big. Hopefully it's better than the one that we had on Sunday, because quite honestly, regardless of how it ended, the Money in the Bank ladder match for the women on Sunday was kind of fucking boring. Not a whole lot happened. We had, you know, Charlotte do one major big kind of flying through the air thing, but it didn't even involve a ladder. It kind of, maybe I'm wrong, but it kind of came off to me as though the booking of the match and kind of the spots that were put together here and there, it came off to me as though they were booking it to be a little bit safer, because women just naturally tend to be, not across the board, but a lot of women are, you know, they're more fragile than men just physiologically. You know, they're smaller, and you can't, a 100-pound human being can't take the same bump on a ladder that a 300-pound human being can. I don't care whether you're male or female. You know, it doesn't matter. If you're a smaller person, you can't take the same kind of bumps that other people can, unless you're Rey Mysterio. And I'm sure that he's paying for every bit of that, and now as he gets on later in his years. But I digress. You know, so it's almost like they were booking it kind of to be a little bit safer. I'm wondering if maybe that's going to be thrown out the window with this next one. I'm also wondering if James Ellsworth is going to be banned from ringside. That would be a smart thing to do if you're Daniel Bryan. I don't believe he said that. I didn't hear him say that this evening. But it would not surprise me were that the case. We're going to have a winner of this Money in the Bank, in my opinion. This is not going to be wonky like it was before. There may be some sort of chicanery involved because, hey, look at all who's involved and whatnot. There may be some chicanery, but at the end of the day, there are no rules, so chicanery is legal. It's interesting to me, and I guess the big question is, should Daniel Bryan have done what he did? And I don't know, because Carmella has a point. There were no rules. There was nothing stopping James Ellsworth from doing what he did. If they wanted to prevent that, then they should have banned James Ellsworth from ringside. We're not stupid. We all saw that James Ellsworth was probably going to get involved in some way, shape, form, or fashion. I was just talking about it here on this show a week ago. We knew that he was probably going to get involved in some way, shape, form, or fashion, and that is inherently not very fair. So, how's about just getting rid of him from the jump, you know? They didn't, though. I mean, what's done is done, and now what's done after what was done is done is done. So Carmella is no longer Miss Money in the Bank, and I don't necessarily know, technically speaking, within the world of kayfabe, based upon the rules and everything that was put forth, I don't necessarily know that that was very fair. You know, she has a point. So, I mean, it's there's no right answer here. There is no right answer. They shit the bed with what they did on Sunday. They never should have opened the door for all of this to even walk through and smack them upside the head. And at the end of the day, we're going to have ourselves another match. Who do you think's going to win? Well, I'm still with Carmella. I think that that would be a real rubbing in the face type moment if Carmella were to climb up there and do it herself this time and just rub it right squarely in everybody's face. Maybe even have James Ellsworth kind of interfere mildly on the outside or something, you know, but not do exactly what he did before or, you know, whatever. I think that Carmella should win because nothing has changed in regards to that. She's got a little bit more heat on her, I suppose, but at the end of the day, Carmella is still in the best position to do the best with that briefcase. So will Carmella be the first and second Miss Money in the Bank? Perhaps. Perhaps. I'm kind of hoping so, but I guess we're just going to have to wait until next week to see. It's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be interesting, but this one, we could talk about it all night. I could spend the next hour talking about it until we run out of time here on the show. But the bottom line is there are no easy answers. There is no right answer. Maybe Carmella should not have been stripped of it. Maybe Daniel Bryan was absolutely justified in what he did. Like he said, you know, it is uncharted territory. This has never really been, has popped up before. And, you know, I guess you kind of, it does seem kind of weak sauce to me to retroactively make rules because you fucked up and didn't make the right ones in the first place. But, you know, that's life, I suppose. That's life. There's always different rules popping up for different people, even though you had no idea that they existed and whatnot. That's reality, my friends. But that having been said, I am looking forward to next week. Hopefully you are too. This was an interesting last little bit. And at the end of the day, my takeaway from all of this is what I've said a couple of times now. WWE just should not have done what they did at Money in the Bank. I don't care how creative it was. I don't care that the storyline aspects of it were solid. I still feel that they were solid. I think it was a good storyline. I just think that it was bad timing. If this had been the third Miss Money in the Bank or something like that, sure, pull something like that, but not the first ever one. That is just, you're just opening the door for criticism, and WWE brought this upon themselves. There is no excuse. There's no make nice by giving us another match. There's none of that. This is all on them. They fucked up. And nothing is really going to fix that. They did some damage, I believe, to themselves and the opinion that people have on how they really feel about women. And it's going to take a little while for that to be repaired. It's going to take a long while. You have to prove your innocence over the course of time, I suppose, you know? But this isn't doing them any favors, and they never should have done it. But we got plenty more else to talk about on SmackDown. We had Nakamura in action this evening. We had the WWE champion Jinder Mahal was in action this evening. We had various other whatnots going on. Hell, American Alpha even showed up tonight. Shock of shocks. We'll be talking about all of that here in just a moment. But first, we have to pay a few bills around here, you know, keep this thing free for all you guys out there in listener land. So I invite you to check out this right here. All right, we are back in the mix here on The Late Shift, and thank you very, very much for tuning in this evening. I know that this has been a hotly debated SmackDown. People were looking forward to it because Daniel Bryan was coming back, and we were also really looking forward to it from the aspect of what the hell is going to go on with this Money in the Bank thing. That's the double-edged sword of doing something controversial, I suppose, because I'm sure that, you know, people probably are very interested in what happened here. I don't know if it's necessarily going to reflect in the ratings, because as we talked about last week, I believe it was, maybe the week before, at some point over the recent past, we have talked about ratings and how they don't mean what they used to. So, you know, it might not be reflected in the ratings that people were interested in this, but I'll guarantee you that you give it, wait till about Thursday and then go on YouTube and look at the amount of views that have been given to the segment involving Daniel Bryan in the ring with the other women where he stripped Carmella of the briefcase. I'd almost guarantee you that thing is going to have a metric shitload of views. A lot of people are going to watch that, I get the feeling. Because the bottom line is that ratings do not tell the entire tale. I don't care what anybody has to say to you. That's just not the case anymore. The dynamic is different. We live in a different reality now. And there's a lot of people out there who don't watch cable television and whatnot anymore. And I don't know that the ratings take into consideration Hulu or anything of that sort. Just about the best way that you can tell how interested people are is to kind of get a combination of everything, you know, with YouTube being a pretty damn good indicator nowadays. And as I said, I'd almost guarantee you that that is going to get a lot of views this week because, again, it's a double-edged sword. You do something controversial and people will be pissed off at you about it, but at the same time, they want to tune in to see what's next. They want to tune in to see what you're going to do about it. What is the reaction going to be? You know, I complained, I bitched, I yelled, I moaned. What is WWE going to do to appease me? And, well, we got appeasement this evening. Like I said, though, I just don't know that it's going to wind up being enough. We will see. We will say it's not going to wind up being enough, period. But we'll see whether or not, you know, if it's a good match, maybe that'll repair at least a little bit of the damage. If nothing else, it'll maybe slightly make up for the fact that the match itself on Sunday was really just not very fucking good. So we'll see. We'll see. But as mentioned before, we began this evening's SmackDown with all the women backstage. They are talking to Daniel Bryan, pitching their case for what they want to see done to James Ellsworth and Miss Money in the Bank, Carmella. He says that he's going to listen to what Carmella and Ellsworth have to say, and he leaves. And then we begin the show with Carmella and James Ellsworth. As mentioned, she cut a fantastic promo. It was really good. If you were ever, you know, if you ever wondered whether or not Carmella could, like, really talk, because, I mean, she's cut some promos and stuff. She cut some promos on Nikki when they were having their feud. You know, she's cut some promos here and there. She has some talky segments from time to time. But she's never really just come right out and cut, like, a full-on, long, segment-long, pretty much, promo. And she did that tonight. She came out there. She dominated the segment. It was excellent. She did a very, very good job. In terms of mic work, she's already better than Tamina and Natalya and, hell, maybe Becky. I mean, she was killing it, you know. She was right on up there, and it was really good stuff. Lots of love for Carmella's promo to begin SmackDown this evening. But we already talked about all of that. She basically said that she did nothing wrong. She pointed out instances in the past where other people have helped folks win Money in the Bank, and nothing was done about that. There were no rules whatsoever, and you can't break a rule if a rule does not exist. Period. And she says that there's nothing that anybody can do about her being Miss Money in the Bank, and she leaves with James Ellsworth. We go backstage, and Daniel Bryan is watching. Of course, he is watching very closely what just happened here, and Charlotte walks in there. Bryan says that he talked to the WWE trainers, and they checked on Charlotte's neck, ... We're never going to hear the end of that, so I don't know. I mean, I guess, are we supposed to believe that maybe Charlotte's neck got hurt at Money in the Bank? I didn't hear anything about that, but I think maybe it was just kind of a random conversation starter because she cut him off, and she was pissed off about what was just said in the ring. She's pissed about how Money in the Bank ended and just said that Daniel Bryan needs to do the right thing, and then she walked off. And that would be the theme of the ending. People weren't asking for him to just give them Money in the Bank or anything of that sort. They were just telling him, you need to do the right thing, because regardless of what the rules are or not in this instance, sometimes it does just come down to doing the right thing. And that is a reality in all of life. You know what I mean? It's kind of that old thing of, like, you know, you and your baby are starving to death, and you know, the only way that you could live is to steal a loaf of bread. Do you do it? You know, it's breaking the law. Nobody else is giving you a handout, though. No, you have no help. You have no one to turn to. You're all alone. Do you steal the loaf of bread if it is your only option to do so? It's wrong, but at that time, it's the right thing to do. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just got to do whatever the right thing is, even if it is in violation of what the rules or laws or whatever the hell sitting out there are. It's the same with, you know, some forms of social protest and things of that nature. Sometimes, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Back in the day, I'm not trying to compare wrestling to the civil rights movement here, but I'm making an example. Dr. King would go into whites-only delis and things of that nature, and he would stage sit-ins along with other people. And it was illegal for him to even set foot in the establishment, let alone sit there for hours and hours, but he did it. He paid the price for it. He went to jail, but it was doing the wrong thing, technically, in the eyes of the law, to achieve the right thing. And so that's something that we are faced with many times in our lives. You know, it might not be many times. Maybe I'm wrong there. Maybe every once in a while you're only faced with that a couple of times. You know what I mean? But you will be confronted with it at one point or another. And tonight, in terms of the storyline, that's what Daniel Bryan's character was facing here. He was facing down whether or not to do the right thing, even if it clashed with what it said or did not say in the rules. Charlotte was the first to encourage him to do the right thing, which is kind of ironic coming from Charlotte, of all people. You know, she's the dirtiest woman in the game, but I digress. They let us know after that that still to come this evening, we will be having, for the first time on TV, it will be Dolph Ziggler taking on Shinsuke Nakamura. We will also be getting Jinder Mahal, WWE Champion Jinder Mahal, just to throw that out there, in a non-title match against Luke Harper, which immediately made me kind of happy and sad at the same time, because I'm happy I get to see Luke Harper, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, why does Luke Harper have to fucking lose to Jinder Mahal, damn it? But, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. Right after I really thought that, I thought to myself, you know, not everybody can be pushed at the same time. You know what I mean? If everybody that I liked was getting a push, there wouldn't be room for all of them. And it would be chaotic and kind of lame, frankly. So, you know, sometimes Luke Harper's got to do the job to Jinder Mahal. It just sucks, you know, that that's the case. But at the same time, you can't have Luke Harper and Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles and Sami Zayn and Baron Corbin and all the people that you like on the show can't be getting a push at the same fucking time. You know, that's just reality. But anyways, we then see the New Day backstage. They are walking towards the ring, and they let us know that it is going to be Big E taking on Jimmy Uso when we come back from the break. We return from the break, and they had not lied to us. It was time for Big E to take on Jimmy Uso. But, of course, the New Day come out first. They're cutting some promos about how the Usos been talking about, you know, the Uso penitentiary and this and that. And then at Money in the Bank, they messed around and they escaped from their own penitentiary. They ran away from the fight. They basically called them cowards, you know, and that did not sit well, because out come the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos. You know, they're coming out. We go to another commercial break. When we return, Jimmy has control. The match has already started here after Jey Uso had distracted Big E during the commercial break. They go back and forth a good little bit here. It was pretty good stuff. You know, Big E using the power game and Jimmy kind of relying upon underhanded tactics and kicks, as he is apt to do. But we get down towards the end of this whole thing. Big E stands over Uso, and he does his dance, the hip swivelly thingy, before running the ropes to go for his big splash. He doesn't hit it, though, because Uso jumps up. Jimmy Uso, specifically. It wouldn't have mattered very much if fucking Jay jumped up. No, would it? Jimmy jumped up. Wow, that was almost alliteration. Jimmy jumped gingerly. Damn. Jimmy got up and countered the big splash with a Samoan drop, winds up getting a two count out of that one. He then nails Kofi with a cheap shot over there at ringside. Big E takes advantage of the slight distraction, winds up slamming Jimmy down. He slides out of a big ending attempt and winds up retreating to the floor. They try to walk out again, they being the Usos. The fans not very happy with this, but here comes Kofi. He's not going to let it happen here. He flies off of the steel steps and winds up taking Jay out. Woods stops Jimmy from leaving. Big E comes over there, but Uso winds up rocking him upside the head. The Usos come on back down there. Jimmy gets back into the ring. He goes for a kick, but he misses. Big E takes advantage of this to scoop him up, nail the big ending, and get the victory. Your winner of this match is Big E, formerly Langston. And, yeah, pretty good stuff here. They celebrate, and the Usos, they look not very happy. You know, they've talked all this smack, and they've done all this stuff, and lo and behold, if they don't, you know, ultimately, they're kind of running scared with their tails between their legs, and at the end of the day, the only reason they ran scared on Sunday at Money in the Bank is because they were losing. They were, like, on the verge of losing, and yet here they come again, and they lose again, so they just can't seem to get one over on the New Day. The New Day's kind of got their number. We'll have to see what they will ultimately resort to when it comes down to this feud. And this was one of those things that I mentioned leading into Money in the Bank and prior to Money in the Bank. It looks like this feud is obviously continuing. I don't know necessarily why it would, because the Usos are not obligated to give the New Day yet another shot. But that having been said, the New Day were handed a tag team opportunity before they even wrestled their first fucking match on SmackDown by Shane McMahon. So, you know, maybe the fix is in. Maybe they don't have to have a reason to get another match, because apparently the commissioner of the entire brand, he's in their pocket. He wants them to have title opportunities, pretty obviously. So maybe that's the explanation for it. Maybe we just won't get an explanation. It's just going to, you know, be one of those things. The feud is continuing either which way. Afterwards, we go backstage. Daniel Bryan is back there. He is talking on the phone to Shane O'Mac when Natalya walks in, and Tamina Snuka is alongside her. Tamina is just kind of standing there looking disgusted as Natalya just sucks up, man. She is just sucking up to Daniel Bryan, talking about how great it is to see him back, and, you know, it's so great that you're a father, and it's so cool, and blah, blah, blah. Tamina stands what she stands, and she can't stand no more. She winds up interrupting here. She wants to know what Daniel Bryan is going to do about James Ellsworth and Carmella. He promises to make an official decision soon, and Tamina winds up leaving while Natalya stays behind a little bit to suck up just a little bit more, you know, lips planted firmly on buttocks. She thanks Daniel over and over and over again, and she finally leaves. Daniel Bryan asks Shane if he can call him back, because he obviously has a lot to deal with here. We go to commercial break. When we return, we get yet another promo for the fact that John Cena, is returning on the 4th of July, and that's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing the return of John Cena. I've missed him, and it's always good to have him around. Dasha Fuentes is then backstage talking to the SmackDown Women's Champion, Naomi. Asks her about what she thinks about all this stuff that's going on with the Women's Money in the Bank, and Naomi says that she is confident that Daniel Bryan will make the right decision with this whole Money in the Bank controversy. She talks about how the other women better be ready for her glow, though. And then Lana comes up, and she asks, what about her? She says she would have won the title at Money in the Bank if it weren't for Carmella and Ellsworth, because if you did not see it, Carmella and Ellsworth kind of teased a cash-in. Carmella came down there, and that did distract Lana a little bit. You know, she kind of didn't know what to think about it. She had Naomi pretty much beat. She had her at least in a pretty damn good position to do some beating. And then Carmella and Ellsworth came out there and kind of distracted her, and she wanted to see what was going to happen next, so she didn't go for the kill. Now, that's her problem, of course. She shouldn't have allowed herself to get distracted, but she did. So she's complaining here that, yeah, if it wasn't for Carmella and Ellsworth, she would be the women's champion right now. Lana challenges Naomi to a rematch. Naomi says, I beat you, but you know what? I'm a fighting champion. I'll give you another shot next week. She tells Lana to get out of her face now, though, before she gets slapped back to Russia. So with the announcement that would come towards the end of the show and this announcement here, it again kind of leads me to think that maybe WWE is saying mea culpa, mea culpa, and next week is going to be very, very heavily woman-based, which I guess is a nice alternative to Raw, where the women can only get 3 fucking minutes or whatever the hell last night, but I digress. It certainly is conspicuous. I mean, I don't know that maybe it was the plan all along. Maybe I'm just being paranoid. Maybe I'm being a conspiracy theorist. But it seems to me as somewhat ironic that we would have all these complaints about WWE and their treatment of women and how they don't really care about women. It's all just the publicity ploy and blah, 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 this and that and the other. All the stuff that's been said over the last 48 hours. And then all of a sudden we get the double announcement on SmackDown that we'll have another Women's Money in the Bank match to correct the issues from the previous one. And we're going to have yet another Women's Championship match. So, I mean, that's an awful lot of women's stuff, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I guess they've, you know, maybe it would have happened either way. Again, maybe I'm just being kind of, you know, I'm being a controversy guy or kind of a conspiracy guy, I guess, is what I was looking for there. But either way, next week is going to be very, very heavily women-based on SmackDown. And you know what? I don't mind that in the very, very least. Hopefully Raw can find their way into doing something like that here before too long, too. But either way, after that's all said and done and that match is all set up, we see stills from Jinder Mahal's win over Randy Orton at Money in the Bank, and then we get led to a sit-down interview with Randy Orton. Orton says that this whole thing with him and Jinder is far from over. He is looking to hinder Jinder at the end of the day, I guess is what he's trying to say. He is looking to end Jinder's career, not his title reign, his career. He doesn't care if he has to break the necks of the Singh brothers. He doesn't care at all about anything because Jinder disrespected his family, so maybe he'll fly all the way to India. Maybe he'll rain down RKOs on all of Jinder's family, though he would honestly need to fucking go to Canada to do that, but oh, I know. I don't know. Hell, I don't know what generation of Canadian Jinder is. Maybe his grandmama and granddaddy or something still live in India. I'm sure he's still got some family there. Who really knows? I don't mean to be presumptuous, but either way, I believe that his mom and dad live in Canada. But, you know, maybe that's, you know, the real Jinder Mahal, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head. But Jinder Mahal, the character, I guess he's just from India. So either way, Randy's going to India. He's going to start RKOing motherfuckers all over the place. He says that Jinder made a mistake and now there's no turning back. So that is a firm indication to me. That, along with some stuff that would happen later on in the night that we'll talk about shortly, is an indication to me that Jinder Mahal and Randy Orton is not over. We've been seeing it for the last couple of months. I was thinking that maybe it would be all over with this last pay-per-view because Jinder will have beaten him and then beaten him in the contractually obligated rematch. But no, Randy's not done with him, so I that really makes me question my little predictions of what was going on the 4th of July. If Randy Orton is not done with Jinder Mahal, is that potentially going to build up to them having yet another match at Battleground here in about a month? And if so, where does that leave John Cena? Is John Cena going to come out on the 4th of July and beat up Jinder Mahal because, you know, he's the evil foreign threat WWE champion? I don't know, I guess, at this point. That seems to kind of write itself, frankly, but maybe that's not going to be the case. Instead, maybe Randy Orton will just keep on fighting Jinder, and then we'll deal with whatever is next after Battleground is over and we're officially on the way to SummerSlam. But for now, it is certainly looking like it will be Jinder and Randy. Maybe, you know, maybe the rematch will happen in a couple of weeks or something like that. Maybe next week. I doubt it will be next week. Next week's show is already kind of busy. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? Maybe they'll get it done before Battleground, or maybe it will happen at Battleground. Either way, I can't say that I'm necessarily looking forward to a continuation of this feud. I don't hate it necessarily, you know. It's just that I'm just a little done with it. I'm ready to see whatever the hell is next. But at the same time, I mean, I guess it don't hurt my feelings that it's going to go on. You know, I'm completely ambivalent about the entire thing. That's the problem with it. That's kind of why I want to see it over with. The Jinder and Randy feud, I just don't care. I really don't give a shit about Jinder very much. I don't really care about Randy to any large degree. So, I mean, what the hell am I supposed to do? I just don't really care about this one. This is one of those instances where I'm watching professional wrestling and heeding my own advice because it is, you know, as I've said many a time before, it's kind of like the circus. If you don't like the clowns, then maybe you like the trapeze artist. If you don't like that, maybe you like the dude in the motorcycle in the little steel cage round thingy or, you know, whatever the hell. So I'm that guy. I'm choosing not to really be invested in Jinder and Randy right now, but there's other stuff that does have me invested, so you know, I'm going to keep on coming back. Plus, I got to do these shows for you guys. You know, I don't have to. I enjoy it. I love it. Love talking to you. This is my favorite part of the week, frankly. It's been a rough couple of months for me, and this has been a respite from the storm. So I really appreciate you guys tuning in. And, yeah, I love doing this show. I really love doing this show. But anyways, enough of that sappy bullshit. It's time to move along here. We've got Dolph Ziggler taking on Shinsuke Nakamura. This, of course, a rematch from their pay-per-view match previously. The first time that it has happened on television, though. Dolph Ziggler makes his way to the ring. We go to commercial. When we come back, out comes Shinsuke. We get the full entrance and everybody's singing along and stuff, and it's awesome. It's awesome. But then the bell rings and the fans are chanting for Nakamura. They kind of start off a little bit slow. They're trading some holds here and there, and just kind of both of them showing off their expertise down on the mat and stuff. Nakamura is trying to tie him up, goes for a cross arm breaker, but Ziggler's able to avoid that. They wind up locking up again, and Ziggler takes control this time, but he's only able to get a one count out of all the rolling around that they do. A little bit later, though, he gets a two count. So, I mean, hell, if they rolled around on the ground a little bit more, maybe he'd wind up getting the dude. Unfortunately, that's not going to be the case. They wind up in the ropes. The referee breaks it up, and Nakamura winds up dodging a cheap shot and telling Ziggler to bring it. He then drops Ziggler with a shot to the face when Ziggler does exactly that and attempts to bring it. Nakamura with more offense, and he hits the good vibrations thing, which that's the only part of Nakamura's offense that I don't like at all. It looks silly to me, but whatever. We get more good back and forth here. Wind up going to commercial. We come back, and Ziggler's got him shut down with a headlock and more back and forth, with Ziggler kind of maintaining a modicum of control for a good little bit of it. Nakamura winds up going for the Kinshasa kind of out of the middle of nowhere, but Ziggler winds up taking out the knee. He nails a rocker dropper, a.k.a. the famous, or but I call it by its original name, and he only gets a two count out of that one. Ziggler goes for the super kick here, nails it, only gets a two count. Nakamura turns it into an attempt at a triangle, and he winds up turning it into a cross arm breaker, but Ziggler is able to mostly avoid it. It never did really get locked in as good as Nakamura wanted it. Ziggler winds up breaking it up with a cheap shot. He kind of poked him in the eyeballs, but the referee didn't see it, so he can't really do anything about it. So Nakamura's rolling around holding his face, and the referee's just like, well, what happened? So Ziggler nails Nakamura with an elbow to the face. Nakamura goes for a kick here, then the reverse exploder, but Ziggler's able to get out of that. He finally hits a zigzag, which he'd been looking for a couple times, but it's not enough. He only gets a two count. Ziggler is not frustrated, though. He doesn't do the usual thing of, I nailed my fingers here and he kicked out, and oh, I'm so frustrated. No, he immediately jumps right back on Nakamura and winds up locking a sleeper hold on him. More back and forth. Eventually, the hold is broken, and Nakamura winds up dropping Ziggler with a knee. He goes and waits in the corner as Ziggler is making his way to a feet, and then we officially get the Kinshasa, and Nakamura gets the one, the two, and the three. Your winner of this match is Shinsuke Nakamura. And I get the feeling we're going to be saying that a lot over the course of the next few months, probably for the rest of the year. I could definitely see a scenario in which they kind of slowly but surely let Shinsuke Nakamura have himself a full-on undefeated streak. And I wouldn't have a problem with that. That's what they did with him in NXT. I think that it would be a cool way to feature him and slowly but surely just kind of build him up to where it's like, you know, it's cool. I kind of dig when they do it right. You know, like Goldberg, they did it right back in the day. He just beat everybody and everybody and everybody. And he just kept kind of slowly but surely ascending his way up the ladder. He became the U.S. champion. And then it just kind of gets to the point to where it's like, okay, who else is there to beat? This guy should be the number one contender. And then bickety bam, he is. They did rush it a little bit with Hogan and Goldberg. They should not have wound up doing that, in my opinion. But, you know, that's another conversation for another day. You can tune into WCW The Legacy Series for that. For now, I'm digging what they're doing with Shinsuke. It looks like they're slowly but surely kind of figuring out what to do with him, and they're just going to kind of let him be him, and that kind of appears to be all that it really takes, frankly. I do, however, think that based upon what we saw at Money in the Bank and the stare down and the ending of that match, I think they know exactly what they've got in Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles. That is going to be a big match at some point down the road, and I am very interested in seeing it go down. But for now, good match between Ziggler and Nakamura. Nakamura with the victory. After that's all said and done, we once again go to Daniel Bryan. He's backstage talking to Sami Zayn. DB reveals that he has booked Sami versus Baron Corbin next week. Sami seems absolutely just fine with that. He can get some revenge on Corbin for what happened to Money in the Bank. Plus, he's got a pretty good record against the guy, frankly. I get the feeling that that's not going to be the case after next week, but I guess we'll see. Becky Lynch walks up, though. Her and Sami have a little conversation back and forth. Sammy's like, I wanted to talk to you about Money in the Bank. You did a real good job. And she was like, oh, you did a real good job, too. And then he leaves. Becky is bringing up Money in the Bank to Daniel Bryan. But unlike the other ones, the other women who have talked to him, who have just kind of been like, you need to do the right thing, she kind of she's invested in this. What is bothering Becky the most is how, she had her hands on the briefcase. And it just, it feels like SmackDown is not the land of opportunity. It's the land of handouts. You know, every time that she feels like she's gaining some momentum, somebody takes a shortcut and winds up cutting in line or stopping her short. And she doesn't even know what to do about it. And the sad thing is that she expects it. She sees it coming, but she can't stop it because they're cheating. You know, how do you stop a fucking cheater? So she expresses great frustration. She asks Daniel, "What can I do?" Brian says that it is complicated. And Becky says, "Really? Is doing the right thing really that complicated?" And she walks away. And that really kind of, you could tell that one, more than anything else that had been said to Daniel Bryan tonight, that whole exchange really resonated with him. You could kind of see it. And so I started kind of getting an indication as to what was going to wind up going down. Because after a promo like that being cut and the reaction to it and everything, how the fuck do you just go out there and let Carmella keep being Miss Money in the Bank? You know what I mean? That would basically be spitting in Becky's face and, you know, all these other women who have just been like, dude, just do the right thing. Because at the end of the day, it was the right thing to take the briefcase off of Carmella. Was it the right thing to do via the rules? No. Was it the right thing morally and the right thing to do in terms of being fair to these other women? Yeah, it certainly was. So pretty solid fucking promo there from Becky Lynch, frankly. We then see the WWE United States Champion, the new face of America, Kevin Owens. He is walking apparently towards the ring, and we get word that he will be issuing an open challenge. That is interesting. We go back to commercial break. When we return, out comes Kevin Owens, and he talks some shit, and he is issuing the Face of America Open Challenge. He's not standing here with the Money in the Bank briefcase because of an injustice that happened on Sunday night, and, you know, the original land of opportunity was America. And as the new face of America, he feels that he needs to carry that on. So he is going to give an open opportunity to some lucky individual from Dayton, Ohio. And AJ Styles' music hits. He comes walking out there, but AJ Styles is not from Dayton, Ohio, which is pointed out very quickly from Kevin Owens. He's like, did you not listen? Just like most dumb Americans, you didn't even hear what I said. I said that this was an open challenge for people from Dayton, Ohio. And then, lo and behold, if American Alpha's music doesn't hit, out come Chad Gable and Jason Jordan. Jordan turns around and leaves, and out comes Chad Gable. So I guess it's just American. Alpha went backstage. But, I guess at least it was good to see them. Because as we mentioned last week, I don't even remember the last fucking time I saw American Alpha. And they're so good. I just don't get that. I just do not understand why American Alpha can't be on television. Just have them beat fucking jobber teams or something even. I mean, there's ways to get those dudes on. It doesn't have to be anything elaborate and amazing. If you'd rather be doing stuff with the New Day facing the Usos right now and you know, stuff like that, then go ahead, you know. That doesn't mean that you can't feature American Alpha in something. But they haven't been until tonight, and it's not even full on. I mean, that's the thing. I'm thinking that they probably heard our complaints because it seemed like it really rose to an uproar last week. I see people complaining about American Alpha not being on pretty frequently, but last week it seemed like I saw a lot of people saying it, and maybe WWE heard. Maybe this was their attempt at kind of correcting that. So we get Chad Gable. Owens is like, why are you out here? I don't think you're not from Dayton. And Gable says that he actually just moved to Dayton this morning. Owens asks for his address, and Gable gives him an address. AJ is like, yep, I know that place. He definitely lives there. And he tells the referee to ring the bell. And Owens is like, what? And Gable jumps him from behind. So this match is underway. And by the way, I actually looked it up on Google Maps before it was revealed. And the address that Chad Gable gave was actually the address of the building that they were in this evening, the Nutter Center. So well played, Chad Gable. So, Owens is like, what's going on? Gable starts from behind and just starts dumping him around with suplexes. And Owens is just like, what? Ah, I don't know. And Gable goes for an ankle lock, but Owens is able to make it to the bottom rope. We wind up with the announcers having AJ join them as Owens rolls out to the floor for a breather and we go to commercial break. So back from the commercial break, Owens is finally able to turn things around. He is beating up Gable a little bit. Gable winds up coming back, though. He nails that gorgeous roll through German suplex of his. It's just a thing of beauty. I've been saying ever since this dude popped up in NXT, there is something there with Chad Gable. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know that they will ever take full advantage of it. But there is something there with Chad Gable. That dude has it. He's got the look. He's got the ability. There's just the only thing that could hold him back, really, I feel, is there's two things. Lack of opportunity, of course, being number one among them, but also his size. He's not the biggest dude in the world. But, I mean, just that dude is the total package apart from that. I certainly hope that he gets an opportunity to shine. And in the short term, hell, I hope that American Alpha does. I kind of found myself hoping here. You know, Big Show just made noise last night on Raw about leaving. What if he demands a trade and we wind up getting American Alpha traded over to Raw? That would be kind of cool. Then they could kind of be under the tutelage of Kurt Angle, which everybody kind of wanted to see. So that would be pretty nice. It's not like SmackDown's fucking using them. But anywho, maybe that was why they were on this evening, you know, just to remind people, hey, these guys exist before they trade them away or something. Who knows? But anyways, Gable is keeping control pretty well here until eventually Owens send him into the post. Gable nails that big rolled through German suplex that I noticed. He holds it, gets a close two count out of it. But shortly afterwards, Owens is able to throw him into the ropes. He nails him out of the middle of nowhere with a pop-up power bomb, and that is enough to get the one, the two, and the three. So your winner of this match is the face of America, Kevin Owens, the United States champion. But Gable acquitted himself well. This was a relatively short match. It's not like he had a huge opportunity to shine. But what I saw, I liked, just like every time I see Chad Gable out there. I hope this dude gets a shot at some point in the future, because I really like Chad Gable. I think that this is a dude that I could really, really get behind if the right opportunities are given to him. And like I said, he did a good job tonight. We'll see. We'll see. Either way, though, Kevin Owens winds up leaving with the championship, backing his way up the ramp so as not to turn his back on AJ Styles, who is standing there staring him down. Which, again, as mentioned before, I said that we didn't get any great indications as to what is coming our way at Battleground, but we did get a few indications that probably some feuds that pre-exist Money in the Bank will be continuing. This is another one of them. It seems pretty obvious to me, via AJ Styles coming out there and getting up in KO's business, that AJ and Kevin are not done. They feuded with each other, you know, for a month or so before Money in the Bank came along, and that was a whole different beast. You know, they were technically feuding with each other, but not only with each other. You know what I mean? But they have a pre-existing history that they look like they're not done with. Not surprising, considering the last match that they had with AJ getting all stuck in the announce table and stuff, which I thought was just a fantastic ending to that match. I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to seeing what they're able to do when they're in the ring with each other again. And it looks like I'm not going to have to wait a super duper long time to see that. But another thing springs to mind. If Jinder Mahal is busy with Randy Orton, and if Kevin Owens intends to come out here and do these open challenges, you know, maybe it was just for this week, or maybe he's going to do it next week too, kind of establish it as kind of a thing. And in the third week, it could be answered by John Cena. That would definitely be interesting, especially when one considers that how did Kevin Owens come up to the main roster? He answered a United States Open challenge. So that would be rather interesting. That would be rather interesting if that wound up being the case. We shall see. It would also be kind of fitting for John Cena to come in and maybe, you know, either go for the United States Championship or at least establish that he wants to go for the United States Championship on America's birthday. That would be interesting. So maybe that's something that John Cena will wind up doing. I'm still kind of leaning towards the gender thing. I just don't know how the fuck Randy fits into all of it. But I guess we'll find out here in a couple of weeks. Either way, Kevin Owens gets the victory over Chad Gable. It was nice to see Gable on TV. It was nice to see Jason Jordan again on TV, even though it was only for like a grand total of like 5 seconds, but still, good to see him. We then go backstage yet again with Daniel Bryan, yet one more again here. He is with the Hype Bros. Zack Ryder shows us footage from December where they won the big Battle Royal where he got hurt, but in getting hurt and winning the Battle Royal, they also became the number one contenders to the tag titles. And that was a big point of conversation last week on Talking Smack after SmackDown. Because they were like, we should still be the number one contenders. We never got our opportunity. You know, we won that match fair and square, or Zach did at the very least. Won the match fair and square. We're going to be number one contenders, but then we lost it on the opportunity because Zach was hurt. So Well, that's the dealio. Shouldn't we still be the number one contenders? We're going to find out. And tonight, well, they lived up to that. They wanted to say what was up. Mojo Rawley says to Daniel Bryan this evening, the title shot should still be valid. Bryan says that the tag division has changed a lot since December, but he will give them a chance next week. If they can defeat SmackDown Tag Team Champions in a non-title match, then they will earn a title shot at a future date. The Hype Bros thank Daniel Bryan, and we go back to commercial. So next week, I mean, it's looking like a loaded card here. We've got the Women's Money in the Bank. We've got a Women's Championship match between Lana and Naomi. And we've also got a non-title match to determine whether or not the Hype Bros get a title shot versus the Usos. So that should be pretty good. I'm thinking they are going to fail. And I mentioned last week that I still believe we didn't get any further indication of it. But I don't know. I just – something in my – it was triggered. My spidey senses tingled. Last week when Zack Ryder showed up in the middle of Mojo's promo, I think Mojo's going to turn heel on his ass. I really think that that's going to happen, and a golden opportunity for that to happen would be if they come up short next week against the tag team champions, the Usos. Or maybe they win next week, and then they lose the title match. Because either way, the fucking Hype Bros are not going to become the tag team champions in the middle of a feud between the Usos and the New Day. That's just not going to happen, okay? So they're going to come up short either next week or when they get the title shot, maybe on the week after that. That would be kind of an even bigger way to sell the 4th of July episode. We got John Cena coming back, and we've got a tag team championship opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that would be an interesting way to build that. But either way, I that would be a choice opportunity. I'm not going to say that it is the time, but that would be a choice opportunity for Mojo to attack and beat down Zack Ryder, though it might lose a little bit of its steam after what we saw last night on Raw with the late, great, realist guys in the room. A moment of silence. How you doing? How are you doing? We come back from the commercial break, and we have a Sonic ad. It's Ty Dillinger and Sami Zayn, and they are discussing those new concrete freeze thingy McGee's. We go out to the ring, and there's – speaking of Sonic, I just have to say that. I don't know if maybe – I never know what ads are going to go in the shows here until after the fact. So if there's a Sonic ad playing over the course of this, I apologize to Sonic, I suppose, because I'm about to say something bad. But I usually love Sonic. I'm a fan of Sonic. I live in Texas, man. You throw a fucking rock, you're hitting a Sonic. The only thing that there's more of than Sonics is fucking Dairy Queens. And the only thing there's more of than Sonics and Dairy Queens is Whataburgers. I'm surrounded by Whataburgers, Sonics, and Dairy Queens just all over the damn place. I actually am now living in my hometown. And my hometown has the first Dairy Queen in all of Texas is in Henderson, Texas. Very kind of cool, but I digress. Love me some Sonic, and I had Sonic this evening, actually, and got me a large cheesy tot, and good Lord, I couldn't fucking eat it. It would taste like straight grease. That's all it did. I couldn't taste the tots, couldn't taste the cheese, couldn't taste the salt. It was just straight grease. I got about halfway through it. I was trying to power through because I was like, oh, I don't want to waste the fucking money, you know what I mean? That's a terrible thing. That's a symptom of having grown up poor. You'll eat something that is actively making you sick just because you don't want to waste the money. That is the difference between growing up having money and not having money. And I think that's, you know, just the difference in experience that people, you know, that's kind of the disconnect that people tend to have. Of course, people know what it's like to be broke. People know what it's like to be rich. But it's that difference in the middle there where you've never quite shared the experiences. And yeah, I kind of grew up that way. So I'm bad about that. I'll eat something if it's terrible just because I fucking cooked it and I don't want to waste the money. In the same case here, I got me some cheesy tots. I was going to go ahead and try to eat them all, even though they were fucking disgusting, and they wound up making me kind of sick. So I'm not feeling all that great right now, to be honest with you, but it is a little bit better than it was. Kind of killed off my dinner, though. I wound up not being able to eat my delicious Sonic hamburger, because Sonic does make good hamburgers. Sonic usually makes good cheese tots. Tonight, they fucking didn't. But that's a little side there for Sonic. But if there was a Sonic ad over the course of this, it was probably for 50-cent corn dogs, which, hey, take advantage of that, or those concrete things. And I've had those. Those are fucking delicious. So Sonic is usually good stuff. It's usually good stuff. I usually get me – I drink – I don't know why we're going off on my diet here. just because I saw the word Sonic and it triggered me. But I don't drink a lot of soda, so I typically drink like water or flavored waters. And yeah, go to Sonic and get a blackberry water. You can get like the Route 44 one, and it's only like fucking 60 cents or something like that. It's fucking delicious. Take it from me, okay? Okay. We move on, though, from the Sonic portion of the show, I suppose. And it was Daniel Bryan coming out there. And this is a segment that we talked about at the beginning of the show about Money in the Bank. And what we wind up with is everybody winds up going back and forth. Daniel Bryan somewhat deliberating. James Ellsworth steps out of line. Daniel Bryan puts his ass back in line. And we get towards the end of all of it with Daniel Bryan saying that Carmella is going to wind up being the first ever woman to hand over the briefcase. He has stripped her of the briefcase, and he announces that next week there will be another Women's Money in the Bank ladder match with the title opportunity on the line. Tamina, Carmella, Becky, Natalya, and Charlotte going at it. And that will be interesting. Again, though, it is too little too late. Hopefully, though, it does make up for the fact that we saw a rather mediocre ladder match at the pay-per-view. I hope that this one will be pretty damn good. We'll see, though. Well, either way, it's gonna make for a fucking good SmackDown, so I'm not gonna complain too much. You know what I mean? But we go from there to a match that I am. We went to commercial from there, but when we came back, we went to a match that I was of two minds of. I mentioned it earlier. It's Jinder Mahal versus Luke Harper, and you know, I mean, I'm happy for it because yay, Luke Harper! I get to see Luke Harper. He hadn't been on in a couple of weeks either. You know, this is a guy that can't seem to fucking get booked for whatever reason, even though he's super talented. But meanwhile, you know, he's facing Jinder Mahal. So, I mean, you know he's not going to beat Jinder right now. Nobody is beating Jinder right now. And that may be kind of sad, but again, you know, again, I just have to tell myself sometimes. I have to remind myself of reality being what it is. It's nice to hop up on your soapbox and point at all the people who could be pushed and should be pushed, et cetera, et cetera. But reality does dictate that not everybody can be pushed at the same time. Luke Harper, I guess it's just kind of his turn to sit on the sidelines and you know, not so much with the winning. But at the same time, you know, it seems like he's done a lot of that over the course of his career, and it'd be nice to see him string together something. You know what I mean? How good do you think, like, just imagine this, if you will. Let me paint you a picture. It's not going to happen, but please allow me to paint you a picture. We have an open challenge for the United States Championship. Kevin Owens. Out comes Luke Harper. Could you imagine a feud between Luke Harper and Kevin Owens? They would beat the shit out of one another on a regular basis. They're both very athletic, big men in different ways. I think that would be a really fun dynamic to watch those two go at it, but we're probably not going to find out. But, you know, hey, you know, who knows? If Luke Harper keeps on going out there and having good matches, eventually somebody's got to pay attention, right? Right? Don't answer that. Jinder Mahal comes out with the Singh brothers. Well, the Singh brothers first come out, then they introduce Jinder Mahal. He, again, I have to say, credit where credit is due, I'm not exactly feeling Jinder Mahal. I'm rather indifferent about him, but his, like, look and especially his entrance are just fucking legit, man. Luke Harper makes his way out there. This is a non-title match. They wind up locking up. Jinder takes Harper to the corner with some offense, but Harper winds up dropping Jinder out of the corner. He keeps control and nails a great big drop kick on him. Very impressive. Jinder goes out to the floor for a breather and to confab with the Singh brothers as we go to commercial break. When we return, Harper goes for a big dive, but Jinder pulled one of the Singh brothers in front of him, and Harper kind of halfway wiped out on the floor and kind of pseudo hit one of the Singh brothers to take him out. So what we get is Jinder taking advantage of this. He floors Harper back as soon as he gets up, takes it back into the ring, and he's got control there for a good little while. Hitting him with some pretty good offense. I mean, I have to give credit where credit is due again. Jinder had a rock-solid match against Randy on Sunday. I actively enjoyed the match itself. I still don't give a shit about the creative. I don't care about the storyline surrounding it. I don't care about either character, really. But the match itself was good, and as a wrestling fan, I can appreciate a good match, even if I don't necessarily care about what's going on extracurricular. You know what I mean? That's the cool thing about being a wrestling fan. You can find the different things that you like about a certain scenario. But either way, he was looking pretty good here tonight. He was nailing Harper with some big stuff, man. He nailed him with some elbows. He hit him with a big – no, actually, Yeah, he was. Yeah. He nailed him with some big elbows and some big shots, and he was keeping him grounded and pounding him down. He winds up going for a big clothesline, but Harper was able to duck under it, and he wound up dropping Jinder himself with a big butterfly suplex to try to take control again. He is fighting back, making a comeback, but Harper winds up dropping Jinder down, getting a pop. He launches himself over the top rope one more again, and winds up hitting a big boot for a two count. Jinder with a big elbow, but Harper catches him in a side slam, sidewalk slam technically there, I guess, kind of big boss man style, gets himself yet another two count. More back and forth here with Harper going up to the top, but Jinder's able to cut him off. He climbs up there, nails him with just a ginormous superplex, but then the music interrupts, and out comes Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin with his Money in the Bank briefcase. And this is a good time for a little bit of an aside to mention that if you didn't see Talking Smack after the pay-per-view this last Sunday, Baron Corbin was on there. Well, Jinder Mahal was actually on there, and then Baron Corbin comes out there, and he kind of gets up in Jinder's face. So it's just kind of a reminder type thing here. You know, it's like, you never know. You better watch your ass, because I'm waiting, and I'm here, and it could be your ass if you don't watch it. You know what I mean? So Jinder is looking on. He's down on the mat as Corbin approaches. He goes over to the timekeeper's area, but he just pauses briefly and keeps walking on by as he laughs. He is kind of he's almost doing the like meet the parents thing where he's like, you know, pointing from his eyes to Jinder's eyes almost. He's just like, I'm keeping an eye on you. And he is not in Jinder's circle of trust. I'll put it that way at the very, very least. Corbin is kind of laughing his way up the ramp there and leaving as Jinder looks on. This causes Harper to be able to come up from with a little bit of a distraction here. It backfired on Jinder. Usually it's him taking advantage of distractions. Harper rolls him up, only gets a two count out of it. He then nails Jinder with a super kick. He goes to knock one of the Singh brothers off of the apron with his big discus clothesline. But this, of course, causes him to... you know, he turns his attention away from Jinder, which is what everybody does. Jinder takes advantage of this distraction, hits him with a big boot upside the face. He then nails the Colossus for the one, the two, and the three. Your winner of this match is Jinder Mahal. Afterwards, he is standing tall. We see replays and stuff. He is kind of raising the title in the air, celebrating alongside the Singh brothers. But then even more music hits. This time it's not Baron Corbin. It's Randy Orton, who hears voices in his head. They counsel him. They call him Fred. He makes his way out there. He meets the Singh brothers in the aisle, and he's chucking them like into the barriers and stuff and beating them up. He gets into the ring, starts unloading on Jinder. Jinder slides out of the ring trying to get away, but Orton just ain't having it. He's fired up this evening. He slides out on the opposite side of the ring, runs all the way around there, nails Jinder with a clothesline before he can see it coming. He slams him into the announce table, slams him on top of the barrier. He falls over into the timekeeper's area and stuff. He is all fired up, nails the draping DDT off of the barrier onto the floor. He then brings it back into the ring. He looks like he wants to go for the RKO, but here come the Singh brothers. Of course, they have had time to recover. They jump on Randy. Randy, of course, is able to fight both of them off because Randy... And he delivers an RKO to one of them, knocking him down to the floor. Jinder, meanwhile, is running away through the crowd with his championship. The other Singh brother comes off of the top rope, but he gets an RKO as well. It wasn't as good a one as it could have been. The guy didn't lay out for it, and I hate that. Jinder's bad about that, too, I've noticed. He goes to the knees too often. I talked about this, I believe, on the Aftershock show, or maybe it was last week for SmackDown even, but I hate it when people do that. Don't take the fucking knee, man. It's just like with the pedigree. I really hate it when somebody puts the knee down when they're taking the pedigree. It just makes the move look shitty. Same thing with the RKO. Don't put your fucking knees down for the RKO. Just lay out for it, man. You're going to be all right. And Jinder has a bad habit of doing it with the draping DDT. Every damn time he puts his fucking knees down, and it winds up making it look dumb. But anyways, yeah, Randy RKO's Bro Singh brothers, but Jinder has already made his way out of there. Randy crawls up to the top, and he is staring down Jinder Mahal. It would seem as though Randy Orton is very fired up. He is looking like he has got some big issues here with Jinder, as if he didn't already have some, but now that his family has been brought into it, so... It certainly appears as though, at the very least, Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal is going to continue into the not-too-distant future. You would assume that it would, you know, but maybe it won't. I don't, maybe it'll keep going and going and going and going and going. Maybe we'll still be dealing with this at SummerSlam. I really don't know at this point. I was really beginning to think that the whole John Cena thing really was going to happen. But maybe I'm way off base. Nobody has told me that I'm off base, and I thank you for that, because that would involve telling me the spoilers, because as I've said before, I don't like spoilers. I don't read spoilers. So I've been seeing various headlines about John Cena's plans when he comes back, what they intend to do with John Cena when he comes back, and I've been avoiding them. So for all I know, those spoilers could be that he does indeed intend to go after Jinder. Maybe it's something completely and totally different. Who really knows? But at any rate, I'm not really sure at this point what the plans may wind up being, because if Randy and Jinder are going to be tied up, where does Cena slot into that? Does he just kind of start a beef with him, and then Jinder and Randy kind of finish their issue, and then Cena kind of steps in as we get towards SummerSlam? And how's Randy going to feel about that? What's Randy even going to fucking do after that? Or does Cena do something else? You know, I mean, I guess the door is open. We do have yet another foreigner with a United States championship running around about how he's the face of America and stuff. I could see how that would be a really good heat getter on the 4th of July episode of SmackDown, which would be an awfully good opportunity for John Cena to take advantage of that. So there's a couple of different doors open for John Cena to walk through. But I guess we're just going to find out here in a couple of weeks which one he chooses. But for now, we're talking about this SmackDown. I'm going to give this bad boy a grade here in just a moment. But first, as per usual, I invite you to check out this right here. You're looking for the best in pro wrestling podcasts. Look no further than Lords of Pain Radio. Now entering our fifth year of bringing you the widest variety of quality, fan-friendly shows that you'll find anywhere. We kick off our week on Monday as The Late Shift with Stephen Bell comes your way live to recap and grade Monday Night Raw shortly after the show goes off the air. Tuesdays provide a double dose as Ms. Fan and Jeff take a look outside the mainstream with the Global Revolution, and The Late Shift with Stephen Bell returns to cover SmackDown Live. Wednesday hits you with your audio prescription for all things wrestling with the Doc on The Doc Says. And Thursdays are as good as you can get as the Perfect 10 Wrestling Show breaks down the full week of WWE action. Fridays bring you an always topical and enlightening look from the right side of the pond, while Saturday unearths forgotten narratives along the path of the rise and fall of World Championship Wrestling as Mystic and Misfan bring you WCW The Legacy Series. That's plenty, but it's not all, as Sundays bring our Aftershock recap shows after each WWE pay-per-view, as well as a wide variety of LOP Radio special edition programs. With that sort of lineup, you just can't miss. So find us and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your preferred podcasting resource, and be sure to pass along those five-star reviews. Because it's all about the fans' voice. Your voice. Right here on Lords of Pain Radio. All right, and that is that. Yes, we do have all kinds of good stuff coming your way here on LOP Radio, and I want to remind you one more again that you can go back a couple of days and check out in the archives the LOP Radio Aftershock program for Money in the Bank. It was a pretty good one, dealing with the kind of the live repercussions of what had just happened at Money in the Bank and all that stuff. So it was a pretty fun show. I enjoyed doing it, and last night's Raw was pretty damn good too, so you might want to check out the Late Shift from last night. I appreciate all you guys checking out all the stuff that I do here. I very much appreciate you guys hitting me up and telling me about it and all the various ways that people get a hold of me. I'd also like to take this opportunity to I said that I wouldn't be mentioning much personal shit anymore, and I don't intend to change that. But I did mention here a couple of weeks ago that I'm in the midst of some divorce-type things, and a few of you had some very kind things to say about that, so I appreciate it. Though, I mean, I didn't get nearly as many ladies reaching out as I anticipated. I mean, who the hell would not want a 36-year-old divorced wrestling podcaster? I mean, come on. Come on. We're not here to talk about that, though. We're here to talk about SmackDown Live. We're going to give this thing a grade, and it's an interesting one to grade because I don't know, the fallout from that Women's Money in the Bank, that is, it's tainted Money in the Bank, frankly. The entire pay-per-view was tainted by what happened, not just the women's Money in the Bank match. It just all kind of has a stank about it as a result of what happened and the fallout from it. It just left a bad taste in people's mouths, myself included. So, I mean, I guess it kind of is what it is. Either way, though, tonight, that was the through line. That was what we were talking about for the overwhelming majority of the night. It was the beginning started with it, then we had it all throughout. Most of the backstage segments were all about it, with the various women coming up and talking to Daniel Bryan. And then it was the penultimate kind of main event type thing, right before the big match to end things between Jinder and Luke Harper. That was the big in-ring segment. Why they didn't save it for the end, I don't know. I guess maybe they were trying to feature the whole Jinder thing, but it seems to me like maybe they would have had the Jinder and Harper match and then waited for the Money in the Bank thing, because obviously that was the reason that people were tuning in tonight. They wanted to know what was going to happen with the Money in the Bank thing. You could have tricked them into watching a Jinder Mahal match if you had done it right, but no, they decided not to do that. So that was the dominant storyline of the evening, and it was a good one. I mean, again, I have to go back to what I said initially. Even though I hated severely on WWE and chastised them and thought that it was a terrible mistake that they did what they did, at the end of the day, I like the creative behind it. And I liked it on Sunday. I still like it now, and I liked it tonight. I like the creative behind all of this. If you remove the, you know, just the dumbassery of it, which is kind of hard to do, but still, if you remove the dumbassery from it, at the end of the day, what you've got is a pretty good storyline here. It's definitely got some heat on Carmella. It's got some heat in general. And I think that this Money in the Bank ladder match next week is going to wind up having a lot of hype. It's going to wind up with some heat behind it, and I don't know, I'm looking forward to seeing how it all goes down. That having been said, as spoken before, it's too little too late, really. You can't redo something that has happened for the first time. You know what I mean? There's no, you know, second first time, you know? It doesn't happen that way. But the opening segment was really quite good, especially the Carmella part. Carmella's promo was fantastic. Lots of props to Carmella out there rocking it on the microphone. Big E versus Jimmy was fine. There was nothing all that amazing about it. It was pretty much exactly what you would expect. Big E getting the victory with various chicanery type things going on throughout, as is, you know, apt to happen with either the Usos or the New Day, and especially with them together. We had the whole Dolph Ziggler and Shinsuke Nakamura match that was really quite good. It wasn't as good as their pay-per-view match, I don't think, but it was still really good. It had good time with it, and they really fought each other quite hard, and Shinsuke looked good, Dolph looked good. This was a strong match for these two. Dolph didn't quite come off looking as good as he did at the pay-per-view at Backlash a little bit ago. He really looked strong in that Backlash match, and it was almost more of a feature for him than it was for Shinsuke. But this was, you know, it was more of a feature for Shinsuke, but Dolph still did look good. It was a quality match between these two guys. The United States Championship match between Chad Gable and Kevin Owens, it was good to see Chad Gable in general, and he acquitted himself well. I mean, we knew that Chad Gable wasn't going to fucking beat Kevin Owens, especially with AJ Styles sitting out there. That really kind of, that spoils it outright, because you're giving away the fact that AJ Styles and Kevin Owens are going to continue their storyline. So, of course, Chad Gable's not just going to randomly come out here and fucking beat him for the U.S. title. That's wrestling logic tells us that that's not going to happen. However, it was indeed good to see Chad Gable, and he really did come out there and wrestle a good match. I love that roll through German suplex that he does, and he nailed that. It was really kind of nice, but it was awfully short lived, and we wind up with Kevin Owens getting the victory rather expectedly. So, you know, kind of was what it was, but it was good while it lasted, I suppose. The segment in the ring with all the women where Daniel decided to strip Carmella of the briefcase, another quality segment, aside from the fact that at one point, I didn't even mention this when talking about it, but Charlotte was like, you need to shut your mouth before I make you look like Ellsworth. And then Tamina interrupted Charlotte and was like, Charlotte, you look like Ellsworth. She repeated exactly what Charlotte had just said, and it was just kind of like, aw, Tamina, aw. And tonight, for the first time ever, I noticed that they're saying her name during her song, during Tamina's song. I always thought that it was just kind of chanting, you know, kind of tribalish type chanting, but they're saying, Tamina, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, Tamina, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. And I'd never noticed before. I guess I just don't really pay a lot of attention to Tamina, unfortunately for her. But there's nothing wrong with Tamina. There's nothing wrong. I did like seeing Carmella get beat up, though. She got her just desserts, and that was pretty cool. And she was left, like, crying in the ring and stuff. She sold it really well. It was – Carmella was just on this evening. She was really good. And then we had the main event of Mahal versus Harper. It's always good to see Luke Harper, and he did a great job this evening. He was doing all kinds of Luke Harper-y things, the things that you would expect from him to do. Very agile, big man. Harper looked great. Jinder looked just fine for his part. This was ultimately a match I didn't super duper care about because I'm just not into Mahal very much, but I was kind of hoping against hope that maybe Harper would be able to pull one out and maybe Randy would interfere or something, but no. Now, my initial instincts were correct. Luke Harper goes down to defeat, but at least he was on SmackDown this week, I guess. Either way, Orton comes out there and hits the RKO and all that stuff. That was fairly entertaining for what it was. Randy at least looked pretty fired up, so that was pretty cool. It was a decent enough episode of SmackDown. Nothing really all that terrible happened. There was nothing bad. There was a lot of mediocre stuff, though. The Ziggler-Nakamura match was quite good, though. And that was good stuff. I enjoyed that match. It was a standout. This one gets a B. It just gets a B. We had some strong segments, but nothing was really just outstanding. You know what I mean? Except for Carmella. She was kind of the MVP this evening, in my opinion. We'll see what it all happens next week and whether or not it's able to repair any of the damage that was done. Who knows? I'm hopeful for a good match, at the very least. And I'm hopeful that Carmella remains Miss Money in the Bank. Hopefully you will join me next Tuesday as we see what happened on SmackDown. And hopefully you will join me next week after Raw to see what happened on Raw. You can just, hell, Monday and Tuesday, I got you on lock, baby. So come back and join me here on The Late Shift. But in the meantime, I hope that you guys will take awful good care of yourselves out there in the really real world. And remember that nothing is trivial. Not a damn thing. Even the little things that you think don't matter, it matters. Because when we don't have it anymore, gotta fuck it up. So, yeah, we'll keep that in mind. Much love, guys. We'll catch you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.